And so the first thing that comes to mind is that seat on the bus conversation. And that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, you've got these values, a lot of excitement around rolling them out. But once they're rolled out, that's where you're going to see team members who don't agree with them, who are resisting them, come to the surface. And that's where you have to determine who's going to take a seat on your bus and move forward with the organization, because you're going in a great direction. You are moving to elevate your organization, and that's not always going to be easy.
Welcome to Culture Change RX, the podcast for healthcare professionals that are committed to creating a thriving workplace culture, improving the experiences of employees and patients, and ultimately unlocking their organization's next level of potential. I'm Sue Tetzloff, your host and co-founder of Capstone Leadership Solutions. Join me and my insightful guests each week as we share actionable insights for navigating the crucial people side of the business of healthcare. Subscribe now for a weekly dose of Culture Change RX. Now let's dive into this week's conversation, where culture change takes center stage. Welcome to this episode of Culture Change RX. I have another one of our amazing coaches with us here today. I have Courtney, one of our Capstone coaches. I love these episodes with our coaches because, as our audience is going to learn, is that our coaches not only have the benefit of coaching multiple organizations and having the experiences of that, but they also come to us with rich history and experience as healthcare leaders themselves. So they can draw on actual experiences of not just coaching and teaching this, but actually doing this. And I love that. And I know that our audience, I know that our partner organizations, that is what they love about our coaches. And that is what we love about Courtney too. So I'm going to let Courtney introduce herself first, and then we're going to dive into an important topic today, one that's near and dear to the work we do in healthcare organizations, and it's all about behaviors today. So we'll start with Courtney's introduction, though. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning, Sue, and thank you. My name is Courtney Clone. I have been in healthcare for the past just over 19 years. I've committed my career to rural healthcare. So I was the administrative services director, the compliance officer, and most recently, I was the vice president of professional services. So oversaw the ancillary services. Now, I also served as the initiative champion in our organization, as well as the employee experience team lead. So really passionate about this work. And as we dive into talking about standards of behavior, really your cultural shift, that's one of the foundational components. So a great topic for us to dive into today.
Oh, it is. And you've, you know, come at it from so many different angles, like you said, you know, in your roles, either as a leader, but also in your organized initiative in your organization to transform its culture and its results. So I'd love for you to start by sharing with us your experience in your specific organization where you were a leader about how you tackled this idea or concept or tactic around, if we want to be a better organization, we need to behave better. And what are we going to do about it? How are we going to approach that? I would just love for you to dive right into the meat of that.
Absolutely. I would love to talk about that. So, you know, the interesting thing is we have position descriptions which outline our skill sets, outline how to do our job to make sure that employees know the expectations of their jobs. But it's just as important to have an outline for standards of behavior so that employees understand what we're looking for in our culture in terms of behavioral expectations. And so when I was the lead of the employee experience team, one of the things that we tackled, I believe in year two of our team, was pulling out our standards of behavior that had been in the organization for years and pulling out what we called core values at the time, because there was a lot of confusion between the two. And really tackling that project as a team. We were an employee-driven team. So leader-led, myself and our amazing HR executive, leader-led, but employee-driven. So we had more employees on the team than leaders. And what we noticed when we began reviewing the standards of behaviors was they were written in language, thou shalt not do this, and thou shalt not do that.
We see that a lot, don't we?
We see that a lot. And when we started to read through them, a member of the team raised their hand, and I was so grateful for them. And they had said, this isn't very inspiring. This doesn't feel like the environment I want to live and work in each day. And so what we did was we took the standards of behavior and the core values, and we did an offsite retreat where the entire team was invited to that. And the question we asked employees was, the employees on that team, what type of environment do you want to come to work in each and every day? What would inspire you? What would excite you? What makes you want to get out of bed and come and do this amazing work? And by the end of that first day, we had a theme, the seven C's of culture. We had the C's tied around that theme, such as customer service, compassion, community, civility. And we were beginning to build in the elements that they would want to come to work every day to be a part of. And that was a really impactful, and it still gives me goosebumps today thinking of that team engagement and how incredible it was when we just hit that peak of creativity and the ideas just started to flow out of the team. And so because they created it, it was something that came from them. They took great ownership in rolling that out to the organization, fine-tuning it, and rolling it out to the organization. And it felt like one of those turning points for our journey because it was a foundational element. So that's how we approached taking what was two distinct sets of expectations. So core values and standards of behavior, the standards of behavior feeling a little bit dated. We married them together, and it was the employees on this team who came up with the great ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. As part of the capstone framework, we talk about creating alignment and creating ownership. And I love how you talked about alignment. So aligning those behaviors with our core values. So like what behaviors really align with the values? And taking that from an employee perspective, because they outnumber us as leaders, right? So the people that are behaving the most, good or bad, you know, are the employees. And so having them own that and then own really not just creating it, but bringing it and keeping it alive. So I'm wondering, you know, what happened next? So you've got these standards and you don't want to go back to the old way of, wow, it's just on a shelf. It's a document that nobody looks at or references and guides nothing. So what happened next? What were the role maybe of the team, but also leaders too? I think maybe that's important too.
You bet. So that passed the baton component where you take it from this team creating this amazing end product and transferring that to the leadership team to keep alive. Now, we also want peer-to-peer. You know, we want employees holding each other accountable as well. But the leaders needed to eventually take the baton on this. So the employee experience team coordinated this really fun themed event for rolling out the new seven C's of culture or standards of behavior. And I know that we're on a podcast, so you can't see the example, but they turned it into a booklet that every employee got, one of the booklets that outlined the seven C's of culture. It went into a little bit of detail of the how. How do you live and breathe these cultural values? And it was filled with photos of our amazing team members living and breathing each value every single day. And so every team member got one of these books. Our CEO did an introductory statement. Our employee experience team closed out the book with a statement about the values and how they were created. And then after that event, there was a yearly recommitment during annual evaluations to the standards. We also shared this booklet with our board of directors. It was also shared with our medical staff because anybody interacting with someone representing our organization needed to be living and breathing these values. And that was only a fair ask if we were transparent with the values, if we shared it with them. And so one of the best parts of having these booklets is, one, it stayed alive. We would have a value of the month or of the quarter to continue refreshing and re-inspiring them. But if we needed to have a conversation because someone is falling outside of the value, or maybe, you know, they don't fully understand one of the values, it was really easy to pull out the booklet and talk about the recommitment and talk about what that value means to our organization, the impact it has on everyone who encounters a team member at our organization. So that's how we took it to that next step. In addition to leadership training, we had a consistent cadence of quarterly leadership development days. And at those trainings, we would include components from the values when they were first rolled out, and then to do that study adjust later on. So the refresh, re-inspire of the values.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love that you also mentioned that leaders had to grab the baton for the work the team did, the employee team did to create these standards, the work that team did to create that commitment event, the work the team did to keep the standards top of mind, like a standard of the month, those kind of things. So they took ownership in bringing and keeping them alive. But when we train leaders through Capstone, and you experience this in your own organization as well, actually doing it, is that there's 9 core leadership practices that we recommend. And pretty much most of them, you could in some way connect to behaviors. I'll give an example, hiring and onboarding. The role of behaviors in selecting people based on behaviors, making that an important consideration, just not those skills, like you say on their job description, of being able to do the job tasks and have the skills and the ability to do that, but to also know that behaviors are important, giving feedback about behaviors, rounding and asking about examples of behavior of people who can be recognized for living. There's so many ways that the practices of leadership can be part of this. Is there a favorite tactic that you had as a leader? One of these 9 core leadership practices, most likely one of the practices that was kind of your go-to practice, where when you were leading your staff, you use this as one of the tactics you use to grab the baton and really create that emphasis for elevating behaviors. Just taking this quick break to let you know that the registration deadline is coming up soon for our healthcare executive forum that is happening on June 12th and 13th, 2024 at Mission Point Resort on beautiful Mackinac Island here in Michigan. Join us for these 2 days of immersive learning, engaging discussions, and networking opportunities. Go to capstoneleadership.net. This year's topic is maximizing momentum with trust, teamwork, and time. Registration deadline is May 20th. Get your spot today. CapstoneLeadership.net.
I would say that one of the most common areas, and my book is kind of falling apart because of it, because I would pull it out, is the giving and receiving feedback as one of the 9 core leadership practices. So whether it was a coaching conversation, a corrective conversation, or I'm having the opportunity to compliment the amazing team, because there were compliments abound in our organization to be given, pulling this out and talking about, what did I witness? What was the impact of that on another life? And what standard did that align to? It allowed me to continuously go back to our cultural values, pull this book back out and talk to them tangibly about, this is what we all agreed upon as an organization and you're rocking at it. Or can I give you a coaching opportunity here and talk through that? Or we need to have a corrective conversation and talk through that using the 7 C's of culture. Behavior conversations are often the most difficult conversations, but by being able to tie it back to standards that we all committed to, it's almost like that muster the will, master the skill. It checked that muster the will box because we've all agreed to these. So in terms of where I really use this in my leadership, I'd say giving and receiving feedback was the top one that this came out frequently for. But in fairness, it flowed through every one of those practices because it's the culture at its core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, every time you give feedback on a standard, you're keeping it alive, whether it's a compliment, whether it's a call out, that's an act of keeping it alive. And I think too, the team's work to keep it top of mind is really important. I know that I remember one time you mentioned that the behavior standards were the 7 C's were something that your medical staff also were aware of and committed to. And I remember one time in one of our partner organizations, I was meeting with the focus groups of providers about a year after they committed to their behavior standards and they were created. And I asked them, you know, like, what difference is this making? And I remember them saying, it's just that behaviors are now top of mind. Like you almost stop yourself, right? Like you catch yourself going outside of the standards and you stop yourself because it's top of mind that, oh, wait, we've got these standards. Or you see somebody else behaving and now all of a sudden it you're more sensitive to it to say, wow, that's in keeping with our standards. I'm going to compliment them. Or it's outside a standard and I'm going to, you know, bring it to their attention. And, hey, I noticed. So did your team in your organization have any really creative ways to just keep them top of mind, like to remind people that we don't have this document that's hidden in on a shelf somewhere, that it's really like, let's remember we have these. What are some of the tactics, or was there a favorite tactic?
Absolutely. So every department had a communication board in our organization, and the values were alive on those boards. So in addition to the communication boards, we would tie the standards into the twice a year employee training events. We would also do fun little activities to kind of challenge on the knowledge of the standards, you know, throughout the year. So the employee experience team was really engaged in doing all of that, but it also aligned to department agendas. So their department meeting agendas would include a component of the standards to talk through. It's really important, not only when you first roll the standards out, because there's a lot of energy there. You're rolling them out, so there's tons of energy around it. But then you want to keep that momentum alive and elevated in order for them to stay alive. So the daily safety huddle at our organization, who can we shout out in alignment with this standard this month? There would be a standard of the month, and it would be included in the notes that came out from that huddle, a specific shout out in alignment with that standard. So these are just some of the ways that you can really keep it alive. What I will say is you'll know if the standards are alive in your organization. So the funny thing that came out during this work was, do we really need to tell people how to behave? And so we were able to use our high in the hallway standard, which came as part of communication, as an example where you kind of get lost in your own day. And you can find yourself staring at your phone or staring at the floor, and you're passing people, and you could pass 10 people in the hallway, not one person greets you. Well, once high in the hallway was put into place, you would pass somebody, and even if you passed them 3 times in the same hour, they always said, good morning, good afternoon, hello. So you could feel that energy in the organization, and you could feel those standards begin to take root. And you'd chuckle at it after about the 3rd time, but you'd still do it because it mattered.
Yeah,
there could be a visitor watching that would see you engage in that way, and they'd be like, wow, this is a really friendly organization. And that's what we wanted.
Yeah. You know, that really speaks to a couple things sometimes that we do here. And you mentioned this, do we really have to put in writing the behaviors we expect of adult professionals? I mean, let's get real. Like, you know, these are adult professionals that work in our healthcare organizations. And you think, do we have to have these common sense standards written out? But actually, we found time and time again, 15 plus years into this work in dozens of organizations, that, yeah, it matters. Now, I did hear, I remember one time in one of the partners that we worked with, an organization where some of the feedback that in response to this was, it almost seems not just unnecessary, but almost childlike to have to do this. Like it feels childish to keep this alive and to do fun activities around reminding us to behave in these ways. So yeah, it can take on a, sometimes there's some pushback to it. It's not just automatically embraced where everyone goes, yes, we should behave better. And yes, we should have these standards that guide what that looks like, right? So these are some of the things that not just the teams, but the leaders push up against. So I want to switch to a little bit more deeper conversation, because it can seem like just kind of some light work and fun work to create the standards, have them be positive, have fun activities that shine a light on the positive nature and the good intent of these. But, you know, it's true that in most organizations, there's maybe some people that chronically, persistently behave below the standard. There's policies for disruptive physicians. Disruptive behavior can happen in any workplace. And just because you have these standards and you commit to it doesn't mean that pixie dust was sprinkled over the organization and that everyone now behaves better and consistently better, especially if there is chronic persistent behavior. Mm-hmm. What tools or actions are necessary with that subset of the workplace? Because it's going to be there. We can't pretend it's not.
You're always going to have that group of team members who liked it the way it was. They liked the culture the way it was. They don't want to be bothered. They're doing their job. So why should it matter if their behavior is out of alignment with the cultural values? Well, it does matter, because your really high performers, the ones who are grabbing the baton and running with it, they're going to notice if you don't hold everyone accountable. And mm-hmm. so the first thing that comes to mind is that seat on the bus conversation. And that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, you've got these values, a lot of excitement around rolling them out. But once they're rolled out, that's where you're going to see team members who don't agree with them, who are resisting them, come to the surface. And that's where you have to determine who's going to take a seat on your bus and move forward with the organization, because you're going in a great direction. You are moving to elevate your organization, and that's not always going to be easy. I recall a conversation I had with a provider, and he and I were great friends. And when we rolled these out, I sat down with this provider. I shared the 7 C's of culture with him. And I had said that everyone in the organization is going to be held to this standard now. And he shared with me that, you know, I will uphold these standards when patients can see me. I will uphold these standards around employees to the best of my ability. But we're friends. So if I don't always uphold these standards with you, it's nothing personal. And I said, but wait a minute. It is, because we're all being held to this same standard. So if that happens, you have to be okay with me calling you out on it, because we're sitting down today, you're signing the commitment with me. So if that does happen, I'm definitely going to call you out on that. Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter of moving from the fun part of creating them and rolling them out mm-hmm. to the very necessary part of accountability, and having that voice to be able to say, I want you on the bus. We're holding you to this high standard because we know that everyone on this team can meet that standard. Will you come with us? And mm-hmm. so that's where those conversations have to take place. And I would say that's the biggest thing when those resistors start to come forward, is don't paint everybody with the same paintbrush. If you mm-hmm. sit everybody down in a department meeting and talk about, you know, not everyone's holding to the line of these standards, the team members in the room who need to hear it aren't going to hear it. And the team members in the room who are already following it are going to be frustrated, because they're already following it. You're wasting their time. So these one-on-one conversations to address the resistors in the moment is your best tool to be able to hardwire these and move them forward. Otherwise, you're going to take steps backward.
Yeah. And, you know, specifically, I'm thinking of another example that I know from your organization. We actually had one of your leaders speak at a conference that we held 1 year in Arizona. And we had a come speak specifically about a challenge he had with an employee in his department that was chronically, persistently behaving outside of the standards. And he knew as a leader that it was his role to individually work with her to address that. And to your point earlier, she was a brilliant clinician. But her behavior was toxic in the department to the point of people not wanting to work with her, not wanting to call her into situations where her skills might be necessary or helpful to the patient because they didn't want her behavior in the room. Those are tough things for leaders. I remember the amount of coaching it took to muster the will and master the skill to effectively address that issue with that one individual. And in that case, it worked. In some cases, it doesn't. And it's really on the person to make a choice. Do I want to be on the bus or not? And so, but if nobody calls that question with them, they're just going to keep behaving like they are on the bus, right? And the leader has the role there. Like their peers at a certain point can't change that behavior. There is a point where it is a leadership responsibility to intervene and know how to intervene effectively and in hopes that it would work. Yeah.
And eventually becomes more and more uncomfortable to be the resistor. You know, when you first roll out a change, it is the leader's responsibility to hold that accountability line because it's new. So they're helping to take that baton, roll it out to their teams and monitor for that accountability component. But in time, you're going to move more and more people to that line of grabbing the baton and running with these standards. And once you do, the resistors are all of a sudden going to be outliers. You know, you're going to have one, two, three in a department, and they're going to feel that starts to feel like pressure. And when you're to the point where the standards are really living and breathing, that's where you talk about that peer-to-peer accountability and having, you know, how do you set your staff up for success to hold each other accountable? But those first few resistors, you're absolutely correct, Sue. That's the leader's responsibility to take that and address it one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah. Were you in your organization long enough to see maybe the next iteration of the standards, like a study adjust where they needed to be updated yet again? Or is that not a point you reached yet in the organization? Because we see that in other partners that, you know, it's not something you want to create a moving target for and that they're changing all the time, but there may be a reason to update them at certain intervals. Did you experience that, Courtney?
So we were moving through that process when I left the organization. So what that really entailed was, one, reviewing the values that were there and making sure that they were still all excellent values for our organization to keep in there. But two, I had mentioned that we married some of the positive communication standards with the values. We were going through it more purposefully to make sure those communication standards were all captured and those communication standards were clear, because we kind of buried them within the seven C's of culture. We didn't call them out in any way. The language was just buried in there. Mm-hmm. So we were looking at ways to highlight the communication standards and to better define them throughout the booklet so that it was one document employees were going to, one commitment they were making each year for both sets of essentially values, your communication values and your behavioral values. So we were underway with that process when I left the organization.
That did happen once in my organization. I was there long enough for us to have to do that, where it was actually our strategy changed. We had gotten to a point where we were really had our sights on high reliability. And, you know, when we first started our transformation and set our behavior standards, I mean, we were an organization that was struggling and spiraling downward, and behaviors were doing the same, just like our results. And so, you know, we didn't have our sights on high reliability when we first set out and set our behavior standards. But as we got to be, you know, really, really good, surprisingly, really, really fast, then we started to have bigger dreams and sights. And so we were like, wow, we didn't really write our standards with high reliability in mind. So I remember we had to go through that process of saying, okay, if we're going after this strategic priority, what behaviors align with that? And what adjustments do we need to make? And that was actually a fun process to challenge our employees yet again with that, because they had to understand, what is this strategy for high reliability? Like, they couldn't write standards like, what do employees and providers and leaders need to do? What behaviors align with that, if they don't even understand it? So it was actually an educational process too, and kind of a fun one.
I love that.
So, Yeah. You know, I was thinking a couple more things in particular along the lines of behaviors that I know is important is onboarding new employees to your behavior standards. How did your orientation or onboarding process change at your organization once you had this newly minted, exciting new set of 7Cs?
You bet. So for our onboarding process, what we had done there was HR would make sure that they received the booklets when they received all of their documentation for hire. But we all know that there is so much information that knowing what to prioritize when can be very difficult. So our CEO did a fabulous job of making sure there was a component near the top of new employee orientation where the executives were all present to introduce themselves. And then the CEO and the initiative champion would stay to outline the journey, kind of a high level, the what, why, and how of the journey, how it connected to the mission and vision and values. And then later in the day, a representative from the employee experience team would come and talk about the 7 C's of culture. And so they would get it at the top of the day, very purposeful, showing that, you know, everyone in the organization, starting with the executive team throughout the entire organization's aligned to this journey. And then later in the day, they would meet the employee experience team and talk about some of these values. And then it was just one of those consistent things as in our culture that was hardwired where value of the month again. Seeing it at employee training, it wasn't something that was a one and done. And so I think that's what made all the difference. And when I think back to early in my career, you know, 19 years ago at the organization, when I received the standards of behavior, it was a one and done. It was a print off in the packet. We didn't talk about it and it went in my drawer afterwards. So it was one of those things that our journey really pushed us to say, how can we keep this living and breathing for all of our employees?
Yeah. So important because even if you skipped it at onboarding because you say, oh, well, they're going to get it each month, or they're going to get it at semi-annual employee training or whatever, or annually at their evaluation, they're going to get it as well. Like you haven't told them the why, you haven't given them the context so that when that's coming at them, they go, oh yeah, we heard about that from the CEO. Oh yeah, we heard about that from that employee at new hire orientation. And so now it really has an anchor, I think, anything that happens after. As an anchor to that onboarding process. You know, I was thinking what else happened in your organization that probably had an impact on this idea of having standards of behavior is your organization expanded by merging with a clinic, a very large clinic. I want to say maybe 100 people or so joined your organization in a short period of time. So, you know, you might think about onboarding 10 or 20 employees or whatever, but you were onboarding, you know, 100 people maybe all at once. And your journey was going on. These standards were in place a long time before that happened. What tactics were used? Maybe it was similar to onboarding to kind of catch everybody up there and get the commitment of those who are merging with the organization and joining cultures.
You bet. So we were very fortunate. The clinic group that became a part of our organization was filled with fabulous people that had been watching our journey. They've been working side by side with us. It's just they were a different organization. So when they came over, it wasn't that all the concepts were foreign. They were fabulous team members. And it was a matter of, yes, we did have new employee orientation set up just for them over several weeks. There were, you know, sections of team members that would come in and get their orientation. But then we saw a trend where they were signing up to be on the teams. And so really a lot of interest in the employee experience team because they wanted to have a voice in that, the patient experience team. So we were watching this trend of we were almost getting a little bit upside down on the teams where we had a lot of people from one area on the team and we had to be thoughtful of that as well. But it showed the engagement in the journey and they really had some rock stars rise up who were like, I'd love to lead that team someday. And so it was a matter of, yes, they got it in new employee orientation. Their VP lived and breathed these values and was great at taking that baton, just naturally took the baton. But then watching the staff raise their hand and say, I want a part in this. That is another goosebumps opportunity, because it's like one of those moments where you see it take life and you start to see the organizations come together. And that's a really exciting moment. And it is difficult when you take two cultures that are very much their own culture and blend them together. But you do so, you know, one of our values, again, is compassion, civility. Mm-hmm. You do so with compassion. You do so with an open mind to this may require us to adjust a little bit. You mentioned study adjusting on values. Mm-hmm. That could be one of those things that shifts your organization to where you need to do a study adjust on your values. It required us of listening skills to really understand their perspective, help to communicate our perspective. And so I truly believe we were stronger. We are stronger together. The organization is stronger together. So that was a really great part in my career at the organization.
Well, I love this conversation about behaviors, having standards for them, bringing and keeping them alive, letting them be a driving force in a great organization. Thank you for your contributions to the conversation and the podcast today, Courtney. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture Change RX. If you found value in today's episode and you are a believer in fostering change in healthcare, join us in making a difference. Follow, rate, and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Share it with colleagues and your network. Together, we can make a lasting impact. Until next week, keep inspiring positive change.